Oh, it's like a video game, but also like a movie, but also like a really frustrating video game. We're talking about Star Trek Borg. Everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd. My name is Drew, and this month we are talking about video games, and we are focusing on games that we feel like we missed the boat on, our missed connections. Missed controller connections is more like it. And today I am bringing to the table a game put out by Simon and Schuster, of all places. Star Trek Borg. This is one of their many, like, point-to-click adventure, but FMV-based games about Star Trek stuff. But I need the random ensign to my lieutenant, whose name I can't remember. Miles, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. This is a great first pick. Honestly, I mean, I think we can out the gate, like, just commend the fan work that went into preserving this game. Like, not only did they successfully make it a browser game that does sometimes have some annoying buffering issues, the website is gorgeous, very, very next gen decorated. The having the option to use, like, you know, or the original video or some that simulates the original video is pretty great. But the honestly, the remastering work they did is insanely good.
Yeah, so it looks like a gentleman, assuming that I am reading the website correctly, and Owen Davies is the one who put this all together and found an obscure Japanese DVD copy of the game that he pulled a lot of the video files from and then used AI to upscale them, and then just put all of this together in a really, really interesting package. You can find this at borgremastered.com. For now, again, it is completely, completely unauthorized, so it could be gone tomorrow. Know that when you go in.
Yeah, in the frequently asked questions, you know, is this legal? And the response is, that's a gray area. It isn't possible to play the original board game on any modern PC or Mac, and it isn't possible to purchase it anywhere anymore. Technically, this game is abandonware, although that term holds no official legal status. That said, the legal rights holders of Star Trek would be well within their rights to issue me with a C&D order. And should that happen, I will, of course, comply and take this site offline. My advice to be would be to enjoy this while you can, because it might away. And they don't offer it in any sort of downloading capacity. It's just a browser thing. And I think this kind of goodwill thing is probably maybe why it hasn't been taken down yet. I don't know. Paramount can be, you know, pretty vicious about their IP.
I don't know. They're going more after the complete fan films and fan videos lately, more so than just this. But I just think this game was maybe so obscure that, at least obscure in 2024, that, you know, well, nobody's really paying that close attention.
Yeah, let's rewind in time. And because this is an era where, like, PC games were, you know, things that you physically bought at the store that came in big old nice boxes. And there were a lot of licensed games. And most of those licensed games did come in the form of some sort of FMV or, you know, kind of choose your own episode type of format rather than always being original games. Now, Star Trek being the IP that it is, has a bevy of all of the above.
For sure. And this game was one that there were games like Star Trek Klingon, and there were a lot of PC-based Star Trek games, and I'm going to be 100% honest with most folks here. Almost every Star Trek game has not been great. I'd argue that even...
I'll say this, I can't say that because I haven't played enough of them, but from what I have played, you're not. Now, yeah. there are a lot of good ones that I've been told about, like Elite Force and some of the more like FPS adventure type games. I know there's a lot of like kind of strategy simulation games. Bridge Crew, obviously, we haven't played.
It's just one of those things that I think, you know, it being a Star Trek thing goes a long way for a lot of folks, myself included.
Same.
So let's get into this game. So this game is kind of weird. We are introduced to a Cadet Furlong who is on some ship and he's you know, been doing like a tour of, and all of a sudden we learn that the Borg are back and that the Borg are headed straight for Sector 001, which, if you know Star Trek stuff, Sector 001 is Earth. The Borg ship is on its way to Earth, and that ship has been ordered to go and join the fight. Unfortunately for Cadet Furlong, though, his request, all the cadets are being, you know, shuttled off away from that ship. So they are not going to be put into the line of fire, which bothers Furlong. Again, also, Furlong never speaks in this game, so you just infer it based on how the characters talking to him say that. Furlong wanted to stay on board the ship because his father was killed 10 years ago at the Battle of Wolf 359, the battle that is the big Borg battle in Star Trek The Next Generation, where Captain Picard was converted into Locutus. He was assimilated, and you know, we know that the Battle of Wolf 359 was a massacre. 39 ships were destroyed. Very few survivors from there. So as he kind of goes back to his quarters to gather his things, because he's supposed to be leaving the ship, who should show up but Q? Q is there to offer him a chance to maybe see something different.
Yeah, now, and this is the most like, okay, insert element here, because like, I feel like Q bothering with like this random ensign, like, while honestly, really solid story. Like this. So if you look this up in Wikipedia, they call it an interactive movie. They don't call it necessarily a game. Because there's the illusion of choice, but there's only really one correct choice for the most part. And then puzzles you have to frustratingly do.
There is something that I learned, but I did not see this in the game itself. If you choose the wrong thing too many times, Q will just game over you. He will say,
"Oh, really?"
Yes, he will game over you. So Miles, it's kind of funny, and I want to know what you did, because you have to watch this whole long sort of lead in thing where, you know, this lieutenant is telling you to, you know, all about this stuff and how, you know, Wolf 359 happened right after she was graduated from the academy. And she lost a lot of friends that day, lost a lot of classmates that day. And and you were then talking to Q, and he basically either says, holds up two things, either a phaser or a cadet suitcase, a Starfleet suitcase. And you have to basically click on which one you want to do. Miles, which one did you click first?
I actually did click the phaser first.
Okay. I knew the phaser was the obvious choice, but I had to click the suitcase just to see what would happen, and immediately regretted my decision, because unlike the rest of the game, where when you choose something wrong, Q kind of takes you to that white sort of afterlife space like he did Captain Picard in the episode Tapestry. He just ends the game and is like, I don't have time to deal with you if you're not going to be serious about this. And I had to sit through that entire super long opening video again.
I obviously had things that I didn't do correctly. The worst of the entire game is if you not activate, but basically setting the sequence of events to where you're in the Borg cube, and if you don't do the right thing, you have to watch like a 10-minute sequence of like all this Borg stuff happening, and it's like, oh my god, this is insufferable.
So some of that I like it, some of that I thought went on, and a lot at the time.
If you could skip it, that'd be fine. But
and,
like,
and what's
it's
weird
like
is that
5 minutes long.
And what's weird is that sometimes it skips you forward in that section, and sometimes it doesn't. But just to continue setting up the story, once you choose the phaser, which is your first choice, you are basically taken by Q back to the USS Righteous, an Excelsior class ship that your father is serving on at the time before he is killed by the Borg in Wolf 359. And all of a sudden we see what happened, the events of Wolf 359 for this ship, which was kind of neat. We don't really mm-hmm. see a ton out of Wolf 359 for anybody. We see a little bit of it with Captain Sisko at the time, Commander Sisko's backstory in the first episode of Deep Space Nine.
Which apparently this was produced alongside that first episode.
No, what they're saying, that moment is you see a ship explode a lot. Those mm-hmm. clips were taken from that episode.
Okay. I misread. Okay, yeah. That makes more sense.
What's funny is that this was actually produced at the same time that the movie Star Trek First Contact was in production. And in fact, both this game and First Contact came out the same month. They both came out in November of 1996.
Yeah, and so I'm not sure if I read this correctly. This is supposed to be taking place about the same time as First Contact, where we find out the Borg are coming to Earth. Is that from First Contact?
They never say specifically in this game. Now, I know there is actually a novelization of this game, as well as, I think, an audiobook of this game.
Yes, which I guess is why Simon & Schuster, like, developed this. It was kind of a set to do those things.
Yeah, but it was filmed alongside not necessarily alongside that, but it was filmed at the same time that they were filming First Contact. What's weird to me, though, and this is the funniest thing about the entire thing to me, is that this is an official production mm-hmm. and they get all the uniforms wrong. All the uniforms in this are incorrect. And it drove me crazy for a few minutes, because in the beginning of the interactive experience, you have in the present day where we are supposed to be going to fight the Borg, presumably on the way to what we see in First Contact. They're all wearing the late Next Generation era uniforms, but with the late Deep Space or the Deep Space Nine Voyager / TNG movie comm badge on it, which, you know, maybe they were phasing the uniforms in at an interesting pace.
Yeah, and they may not have been privy to the costuming for the movie too.
They were probably also not allowed to use the costuming from the movie because they wanted that costuming to debut,
be a reveal
in the film. But when you go back in time 10 years to the USS Righteous at Wolf 359, every cast member is wearing the early Deep Space Nine / Star Trek Voyager uniforms, which wouldn't be rolled out for a few more years. But they are all wearing the correct comm badge. They are all wearing the comm badge with the circular backing that TNG used. So I presume it's because of just what uniforms they had available, because
I would think so too.
Because Star Trek Voyager was still in production when this was going on, and Deep Space Nine had all these uniforms that they just used what they had.
This honestly functions as a fun little like movie. That says, as good as the video production values are, and they are good, like they're very nice, especially for 1995 or six. The Righteous looks a little bit more set-y than even like the TV sets. You know what I mean?
Well, so of the sets we see of the Righteous, we see the following sets.
The bridge especially looks kind of silly.
Well, the bridge itself was actually a redress of the USS Excelsior bridge that they used in a Star Trek Voyager episode that featured the Excelsior. And I, I forget the name of the episode off the top of my head. I'm sorry. I know. But there is a computer core room that just looks like a very cheap set, and a hallway, which looks like a pretty typical Star Trek hallway. Yeah. The Borg ship, however, looks so crappy. It's terrible.
I mean, like, on one hand, like, good on them for the effort. But yeah, I like it looks nothing like any Borg cube I've ever seen.
At least they could fill it with smoke to, you know. Disguise. Yeah,
well, it looks like they rented out a laser tag environment for the weekend and just filmed in that.
Yeah.
Especially when you get the bit where, like, that 5-minute credit sequence where, like, you're chasing the your buddy around. And I'm like, this feels like laser tag. Everything's neon and smoky, and
everything is in first person and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of shaky cam as a result too, which is just, it makes me wonder if they had the camera guy actually in a uniform so that when they handed things out, it wasn't weird. I don't know. So anyway, so you're transported back. You watch the events of Wolf 359 as your father's ship gets destroyed almost instantaneously. It is not even a fair fight.
No.
As we learn through that. And then, of course, Q takes you back a little further, because as it turns out, the guy that was manning the tactical console during the Wolf 359, he wasn't supposed to be. He's just a little young ensign that didn't know any better. The guy that was supposed to be it is this guy named Lieutenant Sprint. But he died 4 hours ago. He wasn't supposed to die. And this is where Q uses some of his Q powers, and he basically makes you save Sprint's life and then puts you in control of Sprint's body to basically, you know, to basically go through as one of your dad's lifelong friends and went to the academy together, as you kind of get to know your dad who was taken from you when you were 9 or 10 years old.
Right.
We are also introduced to a number of other crew members, including Ensign Targis. And she becomes a pretty big deal because she is, she's also a part of your dad's triumvirate of friends and academy mates, but she was like captured by the Cardassians a couple years back and tortured. And so she's got this like memory module, some sort of neural implant that she has on her head, which, you know, she's not Borg, but she sure does look a little Borgy as a result. And basically you just go through sort of step by step as you are trying to figure out what to do in these things. And part of it involves just kind of making what you think is going to be the right decision at the time. And part of it is there's this special Q tricorder that he gives you that basically lets you pause the game and learn stuff about things in the game that it doesn't just tell you. Like one of the early puzzles is you have to reconfigure a console on the bridge. Well, if you don't read how to reconfigure the console on the bridge in the tricorder, then you'll electrocute yourself immediately and Q will make fun of you.
Yes.
And so that's really a lot of the game is just going through and making these choices. And Q also takes over the form of the doctor named Dr. Quint. Hilarious, because of course he's a Q. I'll have you. And we also learn at the end of the game that your name, your character's name is Kalan. Q-U-A-L-A-N. Ha ha ha. Of course, it's all Q related stuff.
Trek writers can never, ever resist being punny with Q stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it comes with the territory. And I did spell that Q-O-M-E-S. Terrible, terrible. Anyway,
no.
So this is where I want to talk about the game itself, because the story is pretty.
It's normal. Fun.
It's fun. I like it.
It's a standard episode, but I mean, I did enjoy my time with it. I thought the story itself was pretty solid.
Yeah, it's all about, you know, these three people kind of going through and doing different things and making choices. But I think one of the things I found most interesting about the game is that it plays tricks on you a lot. And when I say that, like, one of the first things you have to do is you have to, because you have choices to make, and you'll know because there's a big spinning board cube in the corner when it's time to make a choice. And so one of the, so the first thing you do is you repair that console. Then you go down to the computer lab and you have this Borg technology that's been installed on the ship, and you have to figure out what to do with it. And, oh, I've got two different tools, and I've looked and I've seen, oh, this is the tool that removes things. So I should use this tool to remove this thing. That's the right choice. And the second you do that, all of a sudden everything goes haywire. It was the wrong choice. And you're put back at the same, and the ship explodes again. It goes into self-destruct mode. That choice in particular is to do nothing, to actually do nothing and wait for, you know, it's like, ah, yeah, you know what? You're correct. We should find out more about this thing, what this thing is doing, before we just try to remove it, because it could cause more harm. And it's little moves like that that are both extremely hyper annoying.
Mm-hmm.
But also I got some respect for it. I got some respect for the game teaching you how it works. And especially having different cue related videos. I didn't see too many times where I made a wrong choice that caused me to relive the same cue moment. You know what I mean? I did see it a couple of times, but yeah. So yeah, any standout moments for you, Miles, in this experience?
I mean, John DeLancey's performance was great. I mean, he's always been great as Q, but like, they do amp up him being super snippy and stuff because to kind of add to the video game hostness of it.
Yeah.
But him walking around as a Borg and like always kind of, even if it's like not part of the sequence, he's always kind of eyeing you. And I really, really liked that. Yeah. Some of the quote unquote puzzles are really opaque, and the game just really just was like, yeah, trial and error, just figure it out. And sometimes that's fun, like figuring out like the, oh, okay, figure out the codes. Like, there's this sequence of things where like you have to live through as a Borg so you can see the sequence being done. And then when you rewind, you also have to become a Borg to activate it.
Yeah, it's a
weird cycle that it took me way longer than I would care to admit.
This one was really interesting because you think you have what you need. We've talked about this Borg piece of technology. You go to the Borg ship and you have to, like, oh. There's another one that I really liked earlier than this, but yeah, you have to get this code, and you get the code and you think, okay, I've got the code. Now I know exactly what to do. And there's this whole alternate thing that you're figuring out, and this whole like, oh, but the two choices that you have when you get back are both wrong, because it determines that, oh, well, in order to actually use this code, you need a live Borg. So then you get transported back further to an earlier choice, and it was a really that's probably the most interesting point of the game, is figuring all that out. The problem that I had was the code shows up on the screen way too fast for me to figure it out,
write it down.
and so I ended up looking up that code online because
I saw what it was, and I was like, I didn't write it down either, and I was like, I'm just gonna look that up because I'm not gonna remember that.
Similarly, there's another moment earlier on in the game where it's you and your dad, and he does like a hide a coin trick. It's like, pick which hand it's in, and it's to see who is going to go into this hallway to try to find this Borg that's rogue roaming around your ship. And you pick one and you fail, and you pick the other one and you fail. So it's like, you figured out that your dad is playing a trick on you, and so. So the other choice is, instead of clicking on either of his hand, you click on his face and you punch him in the face.
Yeah. And then he's like, I wasn't going to cheat.
Except he definitely, definitely did.
Yeah. Cause I think Q tells you, like, the game's rigged, you know, and, Yeah, that one, the one that I think I had a little bit more trouble with because I just wasn't sure where to click. Because sometimes, like, it's a matter of, like, what where the hitbox is. And yeah. It's when your other friend, Targus, it has the Borg implant on her implant.
Yeah.
And that whole sequence of events was kind of a pain to navigate because, again, there's parts of this game that just aren't really clear.
And there's even an early one where a Borg is on the bridge and the Borg has Targus in a chokehold. And it's also got its little arm manipulator, getting some access to the ship systems. And your choices are to shoot Targus, which lets you do that. And then Q scolds you like, you just killed her. Yeah, what are you doing? and you shoot the Borg and it's like, well, the Borg doesn't work. Oh, you're supposed to shoot the panel. Like,
yeah, I did by accident.
This is and it's one of those games where, like Myst, it counted on you being so interested in what was happening on screen and so interested in how magical the whole experience was that you were willing to do the same stuff over and over again. You know what I mean? To randomly click and find out. Which
is the fatal flaw in FMV games is like everyone always thought, oh no, you're going to be so captivated by this. The mechanics of the game not being up to par aren't going to matter.
Yes.
And unfortunately, that has never been true.
But yeah, it's got some interesting fun puzzle twists, but I think those puzzles were slightly more interesting because I looked up the answer. Namely the puzzle on the Borg cube with the hypo spray.
First. Yeah, so the hypo spray one is frankly just not fair.
Like so you're supposed, so this is a special super hypo spray that has a replicator inside it where you push a bunch of buttons on it and it will replicate whatever you need, basically.
Yeah.
And so I don't even know how you're supposed to determine that code. I just looked that code up because at this point I was like, there's too many codes.
I honestly did the exact same thing.
Second, you are then supposed to attack a Borg, find it, and do something with it. And I tried this so many times because I was like, what could possibly... Because at this point, by the way, you've also already been turned into a Borg to get an earlier code. So I figure you're surely not supposed to be a Borg again. And so I thought at that point when I had the hypo spray in hand, I'm like, well, no, I should just not do anything. I thought this was a not do anything thing and I'll get assimilated again. But no,
right.
That was the wrong choice. The whole idea is that this all comes down to who Lieutenant Sprint is. Lieutenant Sprint is something called a Bejani. This was an alien race that looks completely human. They may even be human, but, you know, might just be like a type of people, you know. And they can apparently go through this thing called a pain meditation. And we learned this earlier on that they can sort of black out and take a large amount of pain and then live through it as a result. And we are supposed to know somehow by randomly clicking that you have to use the hypo spray on your own hand that is placed on the shoulder of this Borg that you're accosting. And then yes. You'll put yourself into a trance and you'll get assimilated, but then you'll still be
you.
You. And throughout all of this,
it's one of the most nonsense parts of this game, to be honest.
It's weird. It is interesting. And I think it pays off in a very humorous way at the end of the game when you are reliving the events of the beginning of the game. As a sort of half Borg, half like a reverse Locutus, you're reverse Locutus at this point because right. you are a Borg that's fully, you know, human, sentient. Quote unquote, fully sentient and not tied into the collective. And you are basically using the same code that you used to turn off a piece of technology earlier to turn off another Borg. Yeah. It's very, very silly. And you save the day and the ship is fine. And Q is like, Well, I really didn't think you could do this, and now I don't know what to do with you. And and then it is all revealed that, you know, what has happened, what's gone on. You are pulled out of Sprint's body. What is never known is what happens to Sprint. Is he still a Borg? Is he still Borgified? They don't mention him after this point. They don't say anything about him. We yeah. don't know. We don't know what happens. But your father realizes that it's you, because he, even though you're 10 years older than you would have been before. And as a result, Q decides, well, you know, we're going to take the easy way out on this, because if you ended up going and fighting in Wolf 359 now, you would just be assumed that you'd know so much about the Borg now that you would change the path of history. So he just plucks you out of this time and plants you right back in the timeline at the beginning of the game, where your ship was going to go fight the Borg, the Battle of Sector 001. And the captain, despite the fact that they've just been through all this, is like, we're a Starfleet crew. Let's go. We may not be heavily armed ship, and we're 10 years behind in technology, but I bet we know more about the Borg than anybody else. And short answer is they don't, because one of the ships has Locutus on it. So
no, but they don't know that that's going to be a thing. Really like resolution. Even the captain's like, oh no, this makes sense, because this way we don't affect history. We did vanish without a trace. We did get assumed vaporized, but this way we don't affect history. And we get to live.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed that ending.
It is a Wayne's World mega happy ending for sure. But it's one that I don't mind, except that we still don't know what happened to Sprint. I don't know what's going on with Sprint.
We don't know what happened to Sprint. We also don't know what happened to them, because, you know, a lot of ships got destroyed in First Contact.
Yeah, there's that.
So because we know they're going to rally into Sector 001. So you're like, oh, well, they're not out of the woods yet.
And I didn't see any Excelsior class ships in that battle. Just saying.
Maybe they got there too late.
But I do want to go through some of the cast of this game, because this is one of the things that is kind of interesting to me. Almost every member of the cast of this game has been in Star Trek
episode before. Yeah. I liked that.
Barry Lynch, who plays the captain, he was a Romulan at one point. He was in an episode where he was like faking to be. No, he was a human that had defected to the Romulans. That's what it was. Can't remember. We haven't talked about the counselor Baraka, who is a really cool dude. I like this guy a lot, played by John Cawthron Jr.
Yeah, I liked him a lot as well.
he would come in, and he's a commander. He sits in the captain's chair. He's apparently a former security officer turned counselor. I wouldn't be surprised if Lieutenant Shax from Lower Decks wasn't partially based on this guy. it was super interesting, because he's played multiple Klingons in the show. Jeff Allen, who plays your dad, Ralph Furlong, he played a
dad. I really liked him.
He played a dad on Next Generation, and I think the Imaginary Friend episode. The guy who played the doctor, I haven't noticed him in anything else. He was only also around for like one scene, and then Q replaced him. Interestingly enough, this is the only time that Q has ever worn a non-red Starfleet uniform. He wears a blue uniform in this, which is really interesting to see.
Fun.
Really weird.
Your other buddy, I think she's in First Contact.
Well, so this I was building up to that, because the other characters that we have are basically characters that were not in very many things. Like the guy who plays Sprint, when you only see him in a second, is just one of the extras, that like one of the named extras on Voyager, who's in a bunch of episodes. Marnie McPhail, who plays Ensign Targus, your other friend, her only other Star Trek role is in Star Trek First Contact. She is in Star Trek Borg, where she is trying to avoid, you know, the Borg at all costs. The only good Borg is a dead Borg, they say, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
In First Contact, she is in engineering on the Enterprise E, when she hears something weird going on the ship, and she crawls up, up this ladder and peeks inside, like, what's going on? And then gets grabbed and screams and is the first Starfleet person to get assimilated in First Contact, which is just very funny that she was in both of these things so far. The Borg themselves are also interesting because they are basically the next generation Borg style, just the, the very pale white faces with the stuff on them before they became more the more biomechanical Borg of First Contact that would end up taking place of the Borg moving forward. But yeah, this experience, I recommend using a guide for some of the more silly parts just because it will be that much more pleasant to get through. But sometimes it's fun to click through and just see what happens, to see what funny things Q will say to you.
Right. Because I know that a lot of people talk about a lot of the quips that like you get, and some of them I didn't hear. Apparently he has some sort of Vulcan joke that I didn't hear. And I think this is I would have loved to have played this in the 90s. I think I can imagine like being just like, you know, drinking some soda. It's Friday night. And playing this like to completion, you know, like I this game is a vibe for sure.
Yeah.
And may not be everyone's specific vibe. It's certainly the vibe of the two hosts of this show.
Definitely. And I think playing it on BorgRemastered.com was ideal, mostly because I can guarantee you the one thing that we avoided doing that. We avoided CD load times loading these video files.
I remember how bad those things were. So I am thankful. No, I think this is a really, really cool experience. If you're not a Star Trek fan, I don't think you're going to get a lot out of it. You might want to like, you know, just travel back to the mid 90s and experience an FMV game. This also makes me want to like really do at some point a deep dive into some Star Trek games and boldly play. because I've played like the Super Nintendo Deep Space Nine game. I've played the Super Nintendo TNG game, and I've played like Star Trek Online briefly, but I haven't really done, you know, a lot of, I do remember the Game Boy game that he is showing me right now.
I have both the original series Game Boy game and the Next Generation Game Boy game.
I would like to like maybe at some point maybe do a curated Star Trek games theme and at this, some point.
This Game Boy game is the 25th anniversary Star Trek Game Boy game, which is only funny because we're approaching the 50th anniversary. Have we eclipsed the 50th anniversary? I can't remember.
50.
I think it's 2027 is 50th.
Yeah, I think you're right. But yeah, this is a really cool experience, and I'm glad we did do it. As a Star Trek fan, you know, obviously, I got a lot to mine out of it. I honestly, I thought the production value, despite some of the sets looking a little goofy, was honestly pretty good. All the actors were great. Like I said, I really like the guy that plays your dad. Like he just gave a really solid performance. Is this game wonky and weird in the way that FMV games always were? Yes. But it was a game that, you know, it's so funny. It wasn't one of my misconnections when you first, you know, mentioned it. But like then looking at the box art, I was like, dude, I remember seeing this like at Best Buy all the time and always wanted to try it. And because I just didn't buy a lot of licensed games because, I mean, they've always had a bad rap for good reason. And Star Trek games don't always have a great rap. And so whether
sorry,
or not that's
sorry,
deserved,
Star Trek fans, I am one. I've tried a lot of them.
I've tried a few, and like people talk well about the Super Nintendo games. I feel like they're almost unplayable.
there's a time and place for all of this stuff.
That Deep Space Nine game kind of sucks.
I barely remember it. I remember not knowing what to do at a certain point in that game.
No idea what to do.
So
and then you get the repetition of the MIDI theme song, which at first is really cool, but then every single time you go somewhere, like, it restarts, you're like, all right, I've had enough. All right,
we're gonna have to go and play some of these. That's
absolutely.
We've got something for next year to do.
Absolutely.
But in the meantime, we've got talking about next year. Let's talk about next week. Miles, do you have a game for us to talk about next week?
I do. I have a massive black hole in my playing history. And it was the first thing that came to mind when I think about misconnection games, because it's a game that pops up every now and then in conversation. And it's one that just always escaped me. And that is Onimusha Warlords.
I loved Onimusha. I loved this game, and I loved its sequel even more, which makes me disappointed that we're never going to see a remastered version of the sequel, because I think it's just a better game. But I am a huge, huge fan of Onimusha. I love the style. I love the game itself. And this is where, though, I remember things about this game a little differently than how we are going to put a couple of restrictions on our play. Because I have most recently played the remastered edition, the anniversary edition, I forget what they called it, that is available on like the Switch and Steam and PlayStation, etc., which gives you an alternate to something that was weirdly common back in the 90s, especially as we transitioned from the PS1 era to the PS2 era. And notably, this is a Capcom game that started life as a Resident Evil project. The original version of this game had tank controls. I'm going to try to play the game for at least a little bit with tank controls, something I have not done in a very, very, very long time. I will probably be changing those controls back very quickly, just a warning. but I don't think the tank controls really mess with the vibe that the game has. The other thing I will say about that is, and I think I'm going to try to find some soundtrack comparisons for you, Miles, but the remastered version of the game has a different soundtrack than the original version of the game. And that's something that we will talk about next week. So gang, now we are going to end the show. And if you would like to reach out to us, you can find us at a number of different places. First and foremost, themoreyouknerd.com, where you can find this and every other episode we've ever done. You can tweet to us at themoreyouknerd. You can go to facebook.com/themoreyouknerd. And of course, you can email us themoreyouknerd@gmail.com. That's themoreyouknerd@gmail.com. You can also go check out Cosmic Crit, which is our other show that we are on along with all of our friends, where we play the game Starfinder, which is a Paizo RPG. It's kind of like D&D in space. It's sci-fi magic D&D. It's very cool, very fun. That's cosmiccrit.com. Go to that website. Look in the upper right-hand corner for the link to the Cosmic Crit Discord, and that is where you can talk to me and Miles all day while we're bored at work. So, with that said, gang, we end the show, as we always do, with a rousing
nerd out. Too nerd for y'all.
Too nerd for y'all is irrelevant.